evil is a word that gets thrown around a lot these days, but even as it still has power to motivate action, both for individuals and for nations, how often is it actually misapplied? And what are the moral implications of that? An enduring analysis of these questions appeared in the New York Times a year ago under the headline, How Should We Respond to Evil? The writer is the Reverend Stephen Polycus, and I am very pleased to welcome him now to State of Belief Radio. Stephen, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Walton.
Stephen, would you talk about the correlation between the political rhetoric of evil state-sanctioned and violence?
In my piece, I go back to my memory of listening to President Bush's State of the Union address in 2002 when he used the term axis of evil. Mm-hmm. And actually in his memoir, David Frum talks about how that phrase came to be. He originally came up with the term axis of hatred, and then President Bush's other speechwriter, Michael Gerson, supposedly switched it to evil because it had more of a theological ring. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is that once you call someone or something evil, you create a moral category for that thing. In this particular case, it was three states, Iran, Iraq, and North Korea. And if I say that something is evil, that means that it is most definitely going to bring about suffering in the world. And so I actually have a moral obligation to destroy that thing. Mm-hmm. And when you think about the way that our policies have unfolded over the past 15 years, we really see evidence of this. I mean, it became morally imperative to take military action against Iraq to destroy this evil regime. And even now, you know, just this week, North Korea had a successful ICBM launch, which makes it possible for them supposedly, potentially, to be able to hit the United States with a nuclear attack. We still think of North Korea policy, I think, deep down in terms of them being a part of an axis of evil. And that changes the way that we are going to interact with them. If we think that this is an inherently evil state, an inherently evil entity, then there's nothing to bargain with. There's nothing to argue with. You don't reason with evil. If we were to think about it in different terms that were perhaps not quite as theological and more policy-based, or using different theological categories, then we would probably come up with a much different policy towards these things that have now been called evil. So think about how powerful just this one word and this one concept is, that it can continue to influence our thought and even motivate us to go to war decades after such a term has been used.
Take what you've just said, take all of that, and tell us how that is mirrored at the interpersonal level as well.
Well, I became interested in this topic also partially as a gay person, thinking about how homosexuality was thought of as an evil and articulated as an evil and continues to be in Christian circles, and how there is a definite distinction between calling homosexuality evil and calling homosexuals evil. I mean, once you bring it to that realm, then once again, you have a moral obligation to destroy the person or the thing that you're calling evil. If you're calling homosexuals evil because of their being, because there's some sort of ontological aspect to who they are, that they are bringing about evil in the world, destroying families, then you really do believe that you have an obligation to obliterate them. Mm-hmm. And that's a scary thing, being on the other end of that.
Yeah.
It's a truly, truly scary thing. If you think about homosexuality being evil in and of itself, then you definitely have a moral obligation to keep that as a concept out of the public realm because it is causing evil in the world. So, I mean, that's just one example of the way that the idea of evil as it's articulated in Christian circles has a direct impact on the way that we interact with one another. Now, think about it for those of us who are in parish life or church life, who interact in spiritual communities. The moment that you get to the person that you're having a conflict with, where you start to see that person as inherently evil or there's something wrong with them, you are denying their humanity and you're denying their right to even exist, because they are so opposed to what is good that there is no way that any good is going to come out of your interaction with them. That's really the kiss of death for any church community, any synagogue, any community of faith of any kind. And because I'm so familiar with this way of interacting with people in a parish setting, I'm extremely disturbed by our political climate, where we are beginning not to be able to see one another as human beings, but perhaps even as evil. I'm observing a very disturbing trend, just anecdotally online and in comments that people say on the left, because it seems that there is a debate going on right now as to whether people who supported the person that you don't think should be in power, mm-hmm. if they themselves are evil. And this is very disturbing, because once we get to that place, there's no return. There's no way that any political impasse will ever be solved. Because if you believe that this person is evil and they are voting for evil interests, then compromise simply can never be met. And the only goal of political action is destruction. I worry on a regular basis as to whether our political system can withstand a force like that. So I think the best way to combat this is to have an open and honest discussion about evil, about what we know it is, about what we know it not to be, and about how to interact with it in the world, because it's there. But if we simply go around and casually ascribe the characteristics of evil to people we simply don't like or don't agree with or vehemently disagree with, if we start calling them evil, we've really gone past a level where we're ever going to be able to reconcile again.
Is it important for us to reach a common understanding of evil? And I'm relating that to what you just said, because I'm not sure, but what in at least political rhetoric, we're getting various understandings of evil.
I think that is that's a really excellent question. I think it's probably, practically speaking, impossible for all people to come to a common understanding of evil. I think that there are, however, historical precedents for people recognizing acts or events and coming to a consensus about the fact that they were evil. So think about, for instance, this liberal world order that we've been living under since 1945. It values human rights. It values globalism. It values states cooperating as opposed to being in constant competition with one another. And it values averting total war. Mm-hmm. And this was all erected, this entire international structure of global governance, as a direct response to the evils of the Second World War. Mm-hmm. This is one of the reasons why we have structures in place to try to prevent genocide and Holocaust and rampant human rights abuses. It's because there was a consensus following the Second World War that something truly horrible had happened, something evil. And they created a response to it that would be able to contain it, avoid it, mitigate it in some way, shape, or form. So there's definitely precedent for people coming to a consensus about certain acts or events or concepts being evil. That's definitely true. I'm not really sure if it's necessary for everyone to come up with a consensus, with a total agreement about what the definition of evil is. Matter of fact, I think that might be a little bit scary.
Yeah. Stephen, do you think we've made mistakes in how we've taught ethics and morality with respect to evil, or is it more a matter of an immature understanding of the concept that makes it such a powerful rhetorical weapon in our culture?
I think that we definitely need to hold political leaders and policymakers accountable for the improper or casual use of evil as a term, precisely because it is such a powerful tool. I mean, it's a little bit like a nuclear weapon in terms of political rhetoric, because as I say, once you use it, you really can't take it back, and it just reverberates for an incredibly long period of time. And it also, historically, has been shown to incite violence. So I think that creating a culture of accountability around political rhetoric, I think this would actually be a really positive and constructive step for people to engage in who are concerned about our politics today. I think our political leaders and our whole system would benefit from it, for sure. one of the difficulties that we face right now, I think, as a society, is that we have so little moral and ethical formation, really. Mm-hmm. Everything from public education to formation in faith communities, we're not really getting the moral education that we need as a people. And so to have a populace that is not attuned to the importance of rhetoric and the nuances of ethics is definitely something that in the long term is going to come and hurt our society as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Has your thinking on the subject of evil changed at all during the past year with all of what we've seen going on? This week in particular, the President of the United States has spent time with world leaders that in the past might not have been identified as particularly good on this side of the Atlantic.
My thinking has definitely changed. I think one of the interesting things about taking on a topic of studying evil, and believe me, I'm just a newcomer at this whole thing compared to the giants of thought who examine evil. But in studying it, you kind of become more accustomed to horrible things, reading about terrible things that have happened in history, and it's made me actually appreciate how innocent of a time that we have lived in, and actually how innocent of a time 2017 might be, if you consider what possibly could be coming down the pike. I don't mean that to sound alarmist. It's just that human history is punctuated by pretty terrible things happening, and that is one of the things that has stimulated thought about evil itself. I think that the thing that bothers me the most is the liberal global order that was constructed after the Second World War was a practical response to evils that had been suffered throughout the world. And it was quite successful at mitigating those things, not 100%. And it also ignored many, many evils that exist in the world, everything from global income inequality to terrorism. These things were not contained by this order. But my fear is that if we're starting to go down this path of dismantling that order, that we might forget the value that it had and the ways that it kept so much of these evils out of the world. So that certainly wasn't as evident a year ago as it is today. And there are definitely debates going on within the policy community as to whether the end of this global liberal world order happened in 2016 with Brexit, with the election of President Trump, who ran explicitly against this world order. And so one of the things I fear is I think a lot about, well, what's going to replace it? And if we are going down a path where the world is changing this dramatically, it would definitely behoove the leaders and interested parties to have an informed discussion about what evils we need to prevent today and in the future.
Reverend Stephen Polycus is rector of All Saints Episcopal Church in Park Slope, Brooklyn, New York. A former journalist, Stephen published an incisive opinion column in the New York Times 1 year ago that is as important today as it was last summer. It is titled, How Should We Respond to Evil? And we'll link to that from stateofbelief.com. It's also worth noting that the article will be included in a forthcoming book titled Modern Ethics in 77 Arguments, A Stone Reader. It'll be out next month. Stephen, I think this is an immensely important conversation to have, and you have done it so well. I want to thank you for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity.